Suddenly, Lucy gave a sharp little cry, like someone who has been stung by a wasp.
"What's up, Thu?" said Edmund, and then suddenly broke off and made a noise like, "Ow."
"What on earth?" said Peter, and then he too suddenly changed what he had been going to say. Instead, he said, "Susan, let go. What are you doing? Where are you dragging me to?"
"I'm not touching you," said Susan. "Someone is pulling me. Oh, stop it."
Everyone noticed that all the others' faces had gone very white.
"I felt just the same," said Edmund in a breathless voice, "as if we were being dragged along. A most frightful pulling. Ugh, it's beginning again."
"Me too," said Lucy. "Oh, I can't bear it."
"Look sharp," shouted Edmund. "All catch hands and keep together. This is magic. I can tell by the feeling. Quick."
"Welcome to a sacred fellowship. This is episode 169, where your hosts, Catherine Olson and Lorianne Schwenk, are discussing chapter one of Prince Caspian. We are using traditional, ancient, and diverse sacred practices to discern everyday themes in the world of Narnia. We are using these stories to learn, to reflect on our lives, and to think about life's big questions."
Take a seat on the sandy beach or settle in your car and join us. Reading in community is an essential part of what it means for us to treat a text as sacred. And we're glad you're here to continue building fellowship with us. We believe that by finding the sacred in these writings of Lewis, we will learn to treat one another as sacred.
Well, hello, Catherine. How are you?
I am a bit footsore, I think is the term for it. I've been doing quite a lot of walking this weekend and
Walking.
I'm happy to be kicking back.
Good, good. What, are you on your way to Mordor?
Actually,
I know you're doing
using the
map.
Fantasy Hike app, and I have gotten past the strutting pony in Hilltown just outside the halfling town, is what they call it.
Halfling town.
But,
Oi.
yeah.
I'm surprised this is allowed under copyright law, but there we are. Do you have a dungeon or a tower for us this week?
Well, my tower is that I spent so much time out of the house because I was going to our church's and semi-annual and annual general conference that we have every 6 months. And so I spent a total of 10 hours listening to speakers and enjoying messages and music, and it was quite good.
Good.
And my dungeon is probably that I am just not looking forward to the first half of this week because I have to do that before I get to the second half of the week when I got my brother visiting.
Oh, that's nice. Oh, I'm happy to hear that. That's very good. Good. He'll
How about
see
you?
you. So this is very definitely small scale dungeon and tower here, but the dungeon is that I can't understand why I am not allowed to see games by the Angels or the Dodgers. I'm 250 miles from LA. There is no chance I could drive off to a game. I don't know why these games are blacked out. So there's my very, very minor dungeon for the day. Not a bad dungeon to be in, but the towers that I just watched a Giants and Padres game, and it was good baseball. It was just a good game. I had no dog in the fight. I didn't care who won, but it was just terrific to watch a good game. And I'm delighted that it's April and baseball is here.
Well, on the other hand, you are sad that you can't see an Angels game, and that's who I'm seeing the Red Sox play on Friday.
Yay! That's really cool. Good. Well, I can watch that game.
Yeah, I'll try and wave from the first baseline.
Great. Great. I'll look for you. Good. Oh, I think that's fun. That's something you're doing with your brother?
Yep.
Oh, very nice. Oh, that's a real tower. I'm glad. Wonderful. So this book, Prince Caspian, I don't know what a capsicum. He's a spicy guy. Oh dear. Oh dear. I think like DLF, I'm gonna be calling him Prince Capsium more than once, and maybe not necessarily by accident. I like this book very much already. I'm enjoying this. And I see that our author has gotten a little creative with some words. And so the Gammers actually do have a few things to talk about. The first thing would be our theme, and I don't think we've said it yet, on our theme for chapter one, not hospitality this time, but welcome what comes. And so it's kind of like hospitality, but kind of not. And we'll see, we'll talk about that. So I wanted to share a short haiku, a long haiku. It's a 17 syllable haiku. I welcome what comes, I let go of what departs. Grateful heart finds grace. So that's one version of this that I was able to discover. And that was from A Seeker's Poetic Pilgrimage by a name I'm not even going to try to pronounce. I'll be interested to see what people think about this comment. But I think it runs through a lot of philosophy, a lot of spirituality, of welcoming what comes. I think it's a lot about being present and all that. So we'll certainly talk about that as we get into the chapter. But we get Peter saying about 57 times, by Jove. And I'd look that up.
It's just such a British thing to say.
Well, I'm wondering why in a Christian allegory are we swearing by the God of Jupiter?
Well, because he personally knows Jesus.
Yes. And also, it is a polite way of swearing instead of saying by God or good God or whatever, which would be blasphemous. So that's from the 14th century. And of course, Jove, we have to get some pi here. It is from the Latin Jovis because there was no J. So Iovis. And then there's that PIE root, which is DYEU, to shine. And we've seen that in other words. So it's kind of nice to see that one again, that that's a common word. And that DYEU, you can see how that could also turn into Zeus. So Zeus is another sky god, a heaven god. And then in classical Latin, Jovis was replaced by Jupiter, and Old English had it as Job. So interesting that there's a book of the Bible called Job. So wonder what the Persian relationship is to that name. So Shakespeare did use it in 1588. By Jove, I always took three threes for nine, is in Love's Labour's Lost. So it is mostly just an expression that you want to say when you really want to say, Holy Mother. Forking shirt balls, as they would say on The Good Place.
That's how to get to the bad places, to say the other way.
Right, exactly. So we're going to stay in the good place. And then there's a
If
mention
you
of a
don't get
wall.
that, please watch some TV.
Oh yeah, please watch The Good Place. Oh my gosh, what a show. I think I've done that three times. I'm ready for a fourth. And then there's a mention of wallflowers, and I always knew that term because I certainly was one where, the girl who doesn't want to dance or something like that. But there really was in the 1570s a type of flowering plant cultivated in gardens and native to Southern Europe where they grow on old raw walls and in rocky places. So it is wallflower. It is just a combination of those two words. So you can see how it ends up, the woman who sits by the wall and doesn't really want to dance or doesn't have a partner. I can see that, but that's recorded all the way back in 1820. So that is 200 years old. So there that is. Was anything you needed to add to any of that or anything that jumped out in the chapter when you were reading it?
No, I just got it entertained by the PIE part with the DYEU. It reminds me of the French Dieu and, of
Yep.
course, Latin
Good.
Deus and the
Yeah.
Greek Theo. So,
Right. That's a
like you said,
rich
it's found
root.
in many different words.
Yeah, right. I can see it in my mind. It's almost like this fractal explosion of taking those DYEU and just shooting it forth. And I wonder what other directions it went. So love it. Love it. Yes, gammers love pi. So it is my turn to just keep on talking, and since our theme is welcome what comes. And it's certainly been a practice that I've been working on a lot, and certainly recently, everybody sometimes says adulting is hard and things like that. So I think the most recent thing was coming back to my car after a meeting and seeing that somebody had scraped the side.
Oh.
And it was the front panel, the door, the back door, and the back panel. I mean, it was just a disgusting slop, scrape. And so, there was nothing to do. There was no note or anything like that. And so, welcome what comes doesn't mean always that you love it. It is okay, now what do we do? Okay, we call the husband, we call the insurance company, and we start making arrangements for fixing this. And so I think, as sort of boring as that story is, I think we have opportunities all the time to welcome what comes. Oh, you've fallen, you now have a broken ankle. Okay. So now this will be normal for a while, and then it won't be at some point. It's not complaining, it's not pitying yourself. It's just saying, okay, now what do I have to do? This is how it is. I can't change this thing. Can't make it go away. What do I do? And so I think when we practice it on the little things that are annoying, we might be a little better off, hopefully, at the biggies, the job loss, the death, the illness. So that's my hope anyway. Because as I accumulate birthdays, those things keep happening more and more. So that's my thoughts on welcome what comes. And of course, there's wonderful things to welcome too. It's great. Get something new, get some money, have some good news. That's wonderful. But let's practice too when it's kind of not as much fun. And I think certainly for our quartet here at the beginning of the chapter, it's not as much fun. And what I really admire is how they welcome it. So when we get to the theme, if we're ready, we can find it.
Well, not to ask you to keep on talking, but since you had this thought for the theme and I did not, what was your place of finding it?
Not the first sentence. The first two sentences is very quickly catching us up and explaining who these four children are and what happened to them before. What I love is that it's a year ago, and now it's a year hence. And they're so, second paragraph, all four of them are sitting on a seat at the railway station and they're on their way back to school. I don't quite know, do they still live with the professor? Or have they gone back home? It isn't said here, so I don't know. But that they welcome going back to school. I mean, it's not necessarily fun. And they're going to go different directions, or they think they are. The boys will go to one school and the girls will head to another. But they welcome this. They're okay with this, and they accept it. So it's still sort of part of the holidays when they're together, but they'll be going different ways pretty soon. And now it's time, as gloomy as it is, it's just time to go to school. So I see that as my first place for welcoming what comes.
I have I'll call it a lack of understanding because I'm not entirely sure what exactly they mean to say with this inclusion. But it mentions that they were sitting on a seat at a railway station with trunks and play boxes. So I'm curious what exactly the play boxes are, and if for me that evokes kind of a setting something aside to bring either recreation or bring a respite from what they're looking at it when, so that they are prepared for there are going to be times when they need to have play, when they are going to need to do self-care. And so that's part of what I think of as a welcoming what comes.
Absolutely. Yeah, they're ready for anything at school. Got everything they need.
Kind of reminds me of Natalie Cush's Road Song, which is a memoir about her family moving to Alaska. And each child was allowed one what they called treasure chest, and it was a small purse that they basically had to keep as their one carry-on item, even though they were driving all the way from California. But it was basically something that they could bring with them to treasure one or two things. And so I'm wondering what each of the children has in their play boxes.
Me too. And I actually didn't even notice that word. I just thinking of trunks and boxes, I didn't catch that. So yay, thank you. I'm gonna have to look that up or think about that. So here we are. But almost immediately we get the word suddenly a whole bunch of times. What do you think of Edmund identifying the magic?
It, honest to goodness, it reminded me of Bilbo in The Hobbit when he recognizes that there is the scent of elves. I feel like it's something that he would not have necessarily brought up before, but he now has a sense of what it is and can identify it. And I'm wondering if it's something that was developed during his years as a king, or if it's something that came as an after effect of his association with Aslan.
He has changed for sure, and I like how quickly he catches on, and they all grab each other's hands and keep together, and he can tell this is magic. But Susan, oh, are we having a setup here for her being a disappointment somehow? Oh, I do wish it would stop right away. I mean, just, I don't know. Maybe I'm reading into it. I don't know.
I've always seen Susan as someone who is ill at ease with the things she cannot prepare for, things that are not within her control. We saw a lot of this in her kind of maternal nature in the first book, as well as her fretting over whether or not things will be prepared. And so I think that there's Susan more than the other children at times has a grounding in her own world instead of the world of Narnia. And so it's harder for her to return. But that could be a completely out of left field assumption.
Yeah, we don't know her quite yet. I have to write that down while I'm umming at you. So at any rate, yes. All right, that's a gentler way of putting it. But now they're in a woody place all of a sudden.
Yeah, so the first place where we always find the children in Narnia as they're getting trees stuck into their back.
Is that always true?
Well, in the first book, they went from the smooth coats to the bristly branches.
Okay. Well, you know more of the books than I, so I'm not sure. But I see Lucy immediately assumes or guesses that it might be Narnia. So I see there that she's welcoming what comes in a
And
way.
also, I think that's a sign of her welcoming Edmund's observation as a truth, which is not something that she necessarily would have done as we met her in the first book.
Well, I like that they're kind of a team now. I love it. What was next for you? They get out of the woods.
I think we can't deny that the a prime example of welcoming what comes. It says there was no land in sight and no clouds in the sky. The sun was about where it ought to be at 10 o'clock in the morning, and the sea was a dazzling blue. They stood sniffing in the sea smell. By Jove, said Peter, this is good enough.
Yep. That's it. And immediately they're all barefoot and wading in the water.
Well, I
And
can't
so,
really blame them.
pardon me?
I can't really blame them.
Oh, I know. But yet I would still be thinking a few minutes ago, I was in England sitting at a train station, and they're just so cool about this. Okay, we're now at the beach. And Edmund certainly thinks this is better than being on a stuffy train, so he's welcoming this with joy here.
And I love that the one of the things that they have as a priority is splashing and looking for shrimps and crabs. And I wonder if, I mean, we don't really know a lot about it, what their lives were like in London or when they lived with the professor, but it doesn't really seem like something they had a lot of access to in their urban lifestyle.
Yeah. And they just seem ready to be at the beach and look for things. And well, I'm sure they would have had holidays and opportunities for that, but not much, maybe, but a little
Well, not
bit.
necessarily during the war, so.
Exactly. But what they do have is apparently books, because my next is Edmund comparing this to being shipwrecked and saying in the books, they always find springs of clear, fresh water on the island. We'd better go and look for them. So he is using what he knows. So, maybe they've read books about beaches, Robinson Crusoe or pirate books or things like that, and they think, well, when you're at the beach, you look for shrimps and crabs.
And I feel like there's a possible nod to them having stayed with a professor, because I'm sure that the professor had library upon library of things that they could draw on.
Yeah, I like that they I'd like that idea. I'd like them to still be with the professor, though they do talk about their father a time or two.
So, I mean, we don't know how long they lived there, or even if they are still there, but it is something that we know they at least had some time after they returned from Narnia.
Right. I want to point out that as they explore the island looking for water, we get a lot more careful geography. So I want to thank the author. I want to welcome what comes here because C.S. Lewis now is very carefully letting us know where they are and what they're seeing, what directions they're going. I appreciate the details, getting a little bit more here.
Wondering if this is a chapter that J.R.R. Tolkien proofread and said, but you don't say if they've gone a quarter mile to the southwest.
Yes. You could say that in 14 paragraphs, or you could say it in one sentence. So they find out they're on an island and they do find some water. And I like also that they know to go upstream. Don't drink the water closest to the ocean. Very smart. And then they talk about, Edmund again taking the lead. We must explore the woods. Hermits and knights errant and people like that always manage to live somehow if they're in a forest. They find roots and berries and things. So again, he's drawing on his books, I think. And what sort of roots do you think are meant? Because I love that Susan asks.
It always brings to mind the idea of the root vegetables, and so things that are planted in the ground rather than growing above ground or on bushes or such things. So I was assuming things like turnips or potatoes or other types of wild vegetables.
Yeah, I have no idea if they would be wild or available in a forest, but I did go down a rabbit hole and I found that there's a common pairing of roots and fruits as well. And that's contrasted with St. Paul and St. James, because Paul said all you need is faith. And James said faith without works is dead. So works is the fruit. And faith is the root. So I don't know if there's anything intended in that, but I always wondered about roots and berries. And just like Lucy, I've always thought it meant the roots of trees. I never had any idea what people were expecting to find that was edible in the trees. And my dad
Well,
used to root beer, so
I'm
what?
looking at Wikipedia on root vegetables, and it includes what they really thought of as roots and berries, because we have an entire category that are just bona fide plant stems.
Wow. So what was next for you?
Let me turn back. I got distracted by the different types of turnips.
Roots and fruits.
I would say that it comes with the two packets of the sandwiches being divided into four portions, and nobody had quite enough, but it was a great deal better than nothing.
Very good.
And they
Yes.
talked about their plans for the next meal.
Right.
I feel like there's a kind of good community work in it, that a scene where, yes, they are doing as much as they can for each other, but they're also looking forward to working for something better.
And then I think what's next is that they do find this remains of an orchard. And so they're grateful for that. And there's food there. And so they at least have more food. So this is good. And it's clear that this was once inhabited. Then they find the wall, and then they're able to get into this enclosure. And I think that's my last instance. So it's the last sentence. They're glad to be able to straighten their backs and move their limbs freely. So they've gone from expecting to get on a train and go to separate directions, and go off to school, to now, oh, I'm just glad I can move and straighten up. So I like these. They work well together here, this team.
Yes, I think they've definitely evolved in their sibling relationships.
So it does make me wonder, is there some holdover, even though they've been returned to their age when they first went through the wardrobe? Are there things that lingered? And we see this with Edmund. He's not the brat. He's resourceful. He's the first to identify the magic. It's they seem to have some wisdom, and also just that sense of camaraderie that they would have developed as kings and queens. So I wonder if what was the imprint of however many years they were there?
I also feel as though there's a greater sense of respect between them, and I think that comes of having worked together in a co-monarchical way. I think I just made up a word, but
You'll have to spell it
while
for
they're sorry, what?
me. You'll have to spell it.
COMONARCHIAL, so
Cool.
co-monarchs.
Okay.
But since they've been ruling together and depending on each other for so much of their guidelines and wisdom, I think that that is where we have an increased ability to work together. Also, children grow up.
And they do grow up. Yes, even a year is a huge change for children. But of course, I'm always looking for the timey-wimey, wibbly-wobbly. No. Anything else for you in the chapter?
I don't think I have anything else.
Then do you have something for us for a sacred practice?
I do, and it's actually the very end of the chapter. We're going to be doing Havruta.
Okay.
And it says, describing the place that they found, it was a great, sacred, quiet place, and rather sad. And all four stepped out into the middle of it, glad to be able to straighten their backs and move their limbs freely. My question, I'm sorry, I keep on being really weird with my pronunciation of vowels, I don't know why, but my question is, why is it rather sad? Feel free to either use the entire chapter or use just that sentence.
I'll just use that sentence. I've been to ruins, and there is a sadness there because you can kind of imagine that you hear the echoes of what used to happen there. And that there was never the intention of a place to become a ruin, not necessarily that a place has intention, though sometimes let's say, a building doesn't intend to fall down or anything like that. And so I think there is this loss of whatever was there. And so I think there's this sadness because at some point it was recognized that this was no longer the place it used to be, whatever it was, we don't know yet. But I think there is almost like this echo of the time when it was useful. So I'm going to chalk this up to actual consciousness in the building. How about that? That there's the stones themselves remember, like the way the way they talk about in Holland there when they're when the fellowship is walking through Holland and the stones remember men. So I think these the stones in these walls remember parties and food and music and decorations and color and life and variety, and that's all gone. So the stones are sad. That's what I'll say. So what would your answer be?
Mine is the fact that this is a haven, and the sadness is that no one else is taking refuge in it. I feel like this is something that it's set apart from the train station, which is quiet and sleepy, but it is not a place where they are able to be at rest. So this is a place where, because it is a bright, secret, and quiet place, it might be a place that can provide for them. But it is something that allows them to move freely and straighten up. So there is a mixed kind of blessing in there.
There is. And I'm struck by bright, secret, and quiet, because ordinarily I think one would find secret places to be dark, Secrets are hidden, they're covered up or whatever. And so I like that this is a bright and secret and quiet place. And so my question back to you then would be why, how can something be secret and bright?
I feel as though something secret is something that is allowed to be relatively untouched, and so brightness cannot be dimmed.
Yay. Oh, I love that. Wonderful.
You have an answer for that?
Only in the boring sense that it's completely abandoned, so it can be secret because there's nobody there to discover it. So is it actually secret anymore? There's now four children in the middle of it. Is it a secret anymore?
I would say yes, because they're able to keep secrets.
Okay. All right. Well, I haven't finished the book. I've read eight chapters, but I can't wait to find out more. So thank you. I've been so excited to get into this. Oh, couldn't.
Indeed.
Oh, I couldn't believe it how much I liked it when I started it. I was so excited. So, and I hope that, oh,
Kind of
so
a sense
next
of apprehension.
episode. Sorry.
I was going to say there always is kind of an apprehension when you start the second book of a series that they might not be quite what you were looking for after reading the first book.
And so our next chapter will be the Ancient Treasure House, and our theme is going to be coming home. And we're eager to hear your thoughts on coming home or welcoming what comes and how you feel about this book, Prince Caspian. And we do love hearing from you, and our community is growing stronger every day. So if you'd like to join our Facebook community, look for A Sacred Fellowship or find us on Instagram at A Sacred Fellowship or send us an email to guess what? asacredfellowship@gmail.com. Thanks to all of you for keeping our spirits up and our thoughts flowing. Please read and comment on Second Breakfast at our website, www.asacredfellowship.com.
And we do also value the contributions of our Patreon supporters. Your support of the site and hosting costs is much appreciated. If you feel inspired to join their ranks, please look at our options on www.patreon.com/asacredfellowship. Perks have ranged from patron shoutouts to literary themed presents, and we appreciate every dollar.
Yes, thank you so much, all of you. We really do.
And sadly, we do not have a mailbox relocated yet from Mrs. McCreevy's administrations, but we are working on a way to send mail through from what would have probably been their school box to the children.
Oh, I remember getting notes at college, mail at college. I just loved that. My little mailbox would be a note package for you. I'd have to go to the window. That's fun.
Oh, I'm not going to go into 5,000 missionary stories about getting mail at the MTC or Missionary Training Center, or how much I complained to my family about My mailbox going hungry.
Not this week, anyway.
No.
Okay. So, in closing, welcome what comes. Let go of what goes. What remains is your truth.
Namaste.
Namaste.